Hello and welcome to the pod of cricket, where five people get around a microphone and talk about the game of cricket. Today we have one of them missing for now, but might join in later. But in the meantime, this is Tariq joining you along with Samir. Hey, Samir.
Hi, everyone.
And Srinath. Hi, Srinath.
Hi, everyone.
And of course, we also have Clive. Hi, Clive.
Hey, everyone.
All right, gentlemen, so we are recording on what should ideally have been day five of test match number three between India and Sri Lanka. But as we spoke about in the last podcast, and a lot of you correctly predicted, India sweeping Sri Lanka aside, India's first proper overseas test series sweep, because in a test series that's three test matches or longer. Anybody surprised at the ease with which Sri Lanka fell apart?
Surely me. Unlike last time, where the Sri Lankans provided some fight and played competitive cricket, this time around, I guess they were literally tormented. And no doubt India played like invincibles, but you were expecting a lot more from Sri Lanka, a little bit of competitiveness or, something to offer. But that couldn't be seen throughout the series, throughout all the three games.
Yeah, I agree with Samir. You expect a side who's playing all their three matches at home to show some fight, at least not like, I think all three tests they had massive first innings deficits and they didn't show any fight. And it was very evident with the way they were just going around with their game. They didn't have, they didn't, except that brief period in the second test where Kushal Mendes had scored a really attacking century. There was no one else who showed that, yes, Sri Lanka is a good side. We are not going to give it to you very easily. Walkover for India. And what more can we say about that? It was just like a disappointment for us.
Srinath, you were one of the predictors of the 3-0 sweep, and you had kind of predicted that it will be rather easy. But where was it according to what you were thinking, or was it an even bigger shock than that?
No, in fact, I was the only wrong predictor, I think. I called it 2-1, if I'm not wrong,
Oh.
because I had basically said that the
Okay.
Sri Lankan spinners will pull it back. One of the main reasons why I said it was how Sri Lanka went against Australia last year. They were playing with a similar young side. They were up against a mighty team, and they were on the back foot to start off with. Yet they somehow managed to win that series 3-0. I mean, I didn't expect them to win it 3-0, considering the Indian side in these conditions is a lot more dangerous for them to face than Australia. But it was surprising to see them capitulate. I mean, they were hardly about 11 days of Test cricket out of a possible. And India broke all sorts of records. I mean, they led by more than 200 to 250 in all three games, enforcing the follow and was forced to do so twice. And Sri Lanka kept ha like they kept having big players injured throughout the series. Gunaratne went, Herath went, Nuwan Pradeep went. These three guys were some of their best performers in that comeback win against Zimbabwe. So Sri Lanka's injuries did them no favors, but I think that was the final result anyway. So all in all, surprising for me because I think I was the only one to have given them any chance in the podcast.
I did predict a 2-0, so I did predict maybe they will draw a game. Unfortunately, not.
But one thing, Vinayak as well was discussing on Twitter that, despite all these wins, there are some real serious flaws in our fielding. Like, for example, wrote about it, and that is Kohli's slip catching. Like, yeah, against a side like Sri Lanka, you'll get many opportunities to pick wickets again. But when you go outside, those opportunities might come,
Rarely.
far less.
According to me, this series was more about, we saw more strengths of India rather than flaws. Yeah, maybe slip fielding was one. But if you see the strengths, I guess, like India played in like invincibles, as I told earlier. We had youngsters performing, Hardik Pandya stepping up, Kuldeep Yadav getting one chance and he made made a mark. Even Abhinav Mukund. Then Ashwin Jadeja again ruling the roster like all the time. And this was a test series where a batsman with the temperament of Shikhar Dhawan scored 358 runs. You know how bad the opposition was. Like, I'm not stealing away any credit from Dhawan. He stepped up at the right time, no doubt. But I have a question for you guys. Do you think he will... Do you guys reckon he will be the same when we go South Africa later this year?
No, I thought he grabbed his opportunity really well. I mean, he can only play his cards and he was called in the middle of the play, I think, which he kept talking about throughout the series. He was away on holiday before the tour because he had no chance of being selected. And after multiple injuries and KL Rahul sitting out, he grabbed the chances. I mean, the first test, both Mukund and Dhawan, you could say, were playing for their places. And Dhawan was the one who latched on to his place and he made merry. I mean, it's not like Sri Lanka were great. They were indisciplined on day one multiple times and chances. Again, South Africa, I'm not so sure. I've peddled my pet theory earlier about Dhawan and how he makes the best use of the conditions and opportunities afforded to him. But if South African tracks are anything to go by from the past, I think he'll find it difficult. I mean, despite all these runs he scored in Sri Lanka.
I think Dhawan is still a fair enough gamble for South Africa, mainly because the pitches could still be to his liking, especially if he wants to play a lot of shots. It's his tendency to probably not use footwork. That's the problem. So I don't know if they would want to quickly go and address that. He could still be a valuable part, mainly because I think for me, the value of Dhawan lies in the speed of his scoring. And in a place like South Africa, it is highly likely that you might want somebody who could turn the game around, even in small passages played during sessions with quick scoring. So I don't know, maybe from that angle, it's probably worth the trade-off that, you know, maybe out of six innings, three is going to be an early wicket, but the other three could become a key difference. So what do you guys think? If I could bring in Clive out here.
Yeah, so the thing is with Dhawan, it's, as you said, a 50-50 chance of him, you know, performing well. But I would actually take the risk because your options are for the opening slot, KL Rahul, Shikhar Dhawan, Pujara, and
Murali Vijay
and Mukund. So it seems that KL Rahul is pretty fixed right now. So the one battle is between Murali Vijay and Dhawan and Mukund. So Mukund is anyways not in the frame. And Vijay right now is a suspect form. He hasn't done well for India for a while. So you would think that, you know, you go with your next best option, which is Dhawan. And if he performs well, well and good. But then that's, you just need to see how they go in on form, because Vijay's form, Vijay did last time really well in South Africa. So Vijay and Dhawan are going to battle it out for that final opening slot in South Africa.
Samir, would you go with Dhawan as well?
No, my preference would always be Murali Vijay when it comes to test matches. And I guess he played well in against Australia. He scored a century, right? If I'm not wrong, he scored a century in the Australian series. And he's been injured and that's why he's been out. So I guess when Dhawan comes back, Murali Vijay will surely get in. And, you know, maybe Dhawan will have to sit out as soon as Murali Vijay is back.
No, he didn't. Yeah, he scored. No, he scored 100 last against Bangladesh in Hyderabad.
Okay. So maybe I guess he scored some 80, 90 runs then.
Yeah, 82 against Australia and Ranchi.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, yeah. But that also was a very good innings.
That's why he's the guy who's relevant as much as.
And he's not a really bad option as well. But then I would rather go in with form players than anything else. Like, go on form and see how they do well over there.
So this upcoming overseas series, I mean, given India's momentum so far, anybody willing to stick their neck out yet and try to kind of forecast how things might turn out for India? South Africa not in the best of shape as they're ready to take on their home season.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, I was exactly saying the same thing, that South Africa are going through some issues with their side. They don't have a proper opener. they don't have a proper middle order batsman. Like they have JP Duminy, but they are rotating him as well. So they actually dropped him and they've got someone else who hasn't done the job well. Then off late, there has been a huge question mark about whether AB de Villiers will play test match cricket for South Africa. So there are a lot of issues with the South African side. And yeah, the thing is we are playing them at away in South Africa. So they might be at the lowest. So this could be our best chance, but we need to accept the fact that South Africa will fight as usual. But if there's any chance for us to have a win or series win over South Africa in South Africa, this is the best chance we could have because our bowling attack is coming around pretty well. Our batsmen are doing really well. Yeah, and they have been scoring runs and they have had experience as well. If I'm not wrong, Kohli, Rahane, Pujara have already played in South Africa before. So they have experience from the last time around. So it could come good this time for them.
Srinath, are you willing to take this on this early or maybe not?
No, I think we're quite far away from the whole thing. India have got about 15, 16 internationals to play, I think, before they head to South Africa. There's even a 3-test series. So even in the Vijay issue, I think it's a little too early to predict because we're, apart from being 4 full months away, quite a few internationals away, and the selector seems to be of the opinion that they're going to rotate the squad, at least with the limited overs legs. A lot could happen. It's not like they're playing only ODIs and T20s. They've got the series, the return series against Sri Lanka. So far too early to predict, but I agree with what Clive said in terms of everybody who forms the core of the squad is nearing or has crossed 50 tests now. So it's kind of a milestone, and it says that they've kind of played in conditions across the world, and some of them have tasted a lot of success. For example, Rahane and Kohli to some extent. The big change for me when India head to South Africa, injuries permitting and fitness permitting, is the shape of their bowling attack. The pace bowling attack genuinely looks like it can challenge South Africa in their own backyard. Shami was exceptional in Sri Lanka, and you can't say that he had great assistance from the conditions because you could see how the Sri Lankan pacers struggled. So Shami, somebody on Twitter compared him to Ryan Harris, and I think they're not too far off the mark. So I think with Umesh and Shami and maybe Bhuvneshwar playing tests in South Africa, I think the bowling attack is looking in as good a shape as it ever has.
Okay, and speaking of the bowling attack, I mean, how do you think Kuldeep Yadav fits into India's test schemes going forward? Somebody who got a chance. I mean, you could say that he was helped by weakened opposition, but he's still learning his ropes on the international test arena. Would you be tempted to look at him as an option in South Africa or anywhere else?
He seems to be, is a far weaker opposition in any form or shape right now. So you can't really measure, but Kuldeep shone against Australia in that pressure game. I mean, not the most conducive of wickets when it comes to leg spinners succeeding. So he's done himself all due favor possible when it comes to selection for next time, because he can only play his hand again, like I said about Dhawan. Well, he's put his hand up. So I think as an attacking option, something that India should consider. Not going to play two spinners. If Ashwin's going to play as an all-rounder, Kuldeep probably offers the second option and allows them to play for five bowlers. I mean, instead of playing a slow left arm orthodox in Jadeja, it probably is a tempting option. If you don't throw him in the deep sea and get him trained to play across conditions, you're not rooming should.
As what Srinath said, I don't have, like, Kuldeep has performed, like, whenever he has gotten an opportunity, he has done well. He has not disappointed us. So the thing is, he's a wrist spinner. So I have this affinity towards wrist spinners because they mainly don't need the pitch to do any damage, to get any turn. So let's see, like, taking him to South Africa and making him play in South Africa could be a bridge too far for him. But then I wouldn't put it across him to actually do some damage for India there. Like, get some wickets, make some game-changing like so change the game in a session or something like that. So I wouldn't put it across him as well. But then expecting a lot from him early in his career is a bit too much pressure on him. So yeah.
I will completely agree with Clive there. When you have, first of all, South Africa, I don't think it will be supporting spin. But then again, he's a leg spinner, so you never know. But when you have the number one and number two spinners in your squad, I don't think India will try to experiment Kuldeep come South Africa. They might rather go with Ashwin or Jadeja only. So Kuldeep in tests in South Africa is maybe a too far thing. Maybe, yeah, he might get a chance when Sri Lanka come here in India in November, I guess. But otherwise, I don't think, you know, he will get a chance in South Africa.
All right, everybody. So turning our gaze onto the upcoming series where Sri Lanka are expected to be slightly better competitors at the ODIs and the T20, or more specifically the ODIs. But India seem to have gone with this tactic of resting some of the seniors, sending them on county stints, and with a team which is India A+. So what's your take on the Indian squad for the ODIs?
Talking about India, first of all, with Yuvraj being dropped, there's a lot at stake for Mahendra Singh Dhoni, and he has got to prove himself that he is the one whom India is going to be reliable at for the number five spot. Coming to KL Rahul at number four is going to be an interesting choice, because if he settles at that position, India has their batting order sorted with Rohit Sharma, Dhawan, Kohli, and in the lower order, we have Kedar Jadhav and Hardik Pandya. So it's going to be pretty much sorted. Talking about the Indian bowling lineup, it seems a little bit unreliable without Mohammad Shami, without Umesh Yadav, although he doesn't make much of a difference when it comes to the limited overs. Shardul Thakur is an interesting choice for the ODIs. So probably that would be something to look forward to. I guess India should win it 4-1. I am already predicting it.
Okay, so without prompting, Sameer has gone on the prediction. Clive, what's your call on the team, especially among anybody among the more unconventional selections that we should be looking out for?
See, the thing is, I really like, you know, what the selection committee has done. Okay, giving, you know, dropping Jadeja and Ashwin, but giving them a rest. What that does is, you know, it shows our option. So, you know, we can try how a Kuldeep Yadav, Chahal, Akshar Patel would work in the system as such. And the thing is, the fact that Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav are wrist spinners, and as we all know how the wrist spinners are picking the key wickets now in the middle overs of the game, you would think that having them around will be a huge benefit for all of us, for the Indian side. So I like that selection, even though it might not be a full-term one, but it at least lets India try out its alternatives to Jadeja and Ashwin. And then the thing about Yuvraj Singh was, as MSK Prasad said, that, you know, you need a fit 11, and Yuvraj Singh didn't particularly look really fit during the Champions Trophy. Like, his fielding suffered a lot, and which is very surprising given that we all know how Yuvraj was a great fielder when he entered the side. His fielding was one of the biggest contributions as well. So you could understand, like, where he might have been left out or might have been dropped. But the rest of the side is pretty good. I really like the fact that, you know, the selection committee is trying out at least their options and trying to identify the potential players for the 2019 World Cup. Okay, because you would rather have a phase where, you know, you tried all the players and then World Cup, you come up and say, okay, fine, we have tried all the players and these are the best ones. Rather than just before the 2019 World Cup, you're like, okay, fine, we might have to go with this. We don't know how we'll perform out now. So I'd rather try them now and then make an informed decision and go right before the 2019 World Cup and see how it goes.
Okay, yep. And a quick word from you, Srinath, on the composition of the side, because they seem to have gone with this slightly, could say, eclectic mix. Do you think it's an eclectic mix, or is it this more of the same old?
No, I think it is just India shows trying to... how... No, I'm just saying it's It shows how difficult it is for anybody to get into the team that Shreyas Iyer still finds himself outside the squad itself. I mean, he's got runs, but Manish Pandey kind of outscored him in South Africa. The A2s are going well, players are coming through. So I think this is as much experimentation as is possible at this point in time. If you look at the number of series coming in, I'm sure all these guys will get a look in. I mean, there's going to be 3 ODI series at home to follow this. I mean, before they go. So this is as much experimentation as is possible in one series. And I thought, taking off on what Clive said, I thought MSK Prasad's like great fun and absolutely holds no, I mean, he doesn't hold back on anything. He's come out and spoken about Yuvraj and Dhoni. He referenced Agassi's open. He spoke about how very few players after 30 actually go on to shine and how Agassi was a rare talent. I mean, I've not seen so much eloquence and well-readiness, so to speak, from an Indian selector in a long time. I mean, the fact that he's having a press conference itself is a great thing. It's not something that's common with the BCCI. There's very less speculation. For once, we are so clear about who stands where and everybody knows their place. So I thought it was all great fun with the selection. So I think MSK Prasad is my biggest winner from this ODI squad more than anybody else.
Yeah, actually, I agree with that. And you know, I really like, you know, his system where he set up that he informs the players about where they stand. So they basically don't have any insecurities about, like, if a player is dropped, they explain why he's been dropped, okay, what has been lacking in his game, how he can improve, how he can come back. So they basically just don't leave the players out in the wilderness. They just don't tell them, okay, we have dropped you now, you're not responsible. They just go around, they drop them. If they drop them, if they rest them, they tell them, okay, fine, we have dropped and rested you for so-and-so reason. We are trying out these players, okay, and this is what we kind of want from you or from the team. So they are keeping them in the loop. So that's one of the greatest things for the selection committee, in my opinion.
Okay, and what I've been looking out for...
One last thing, I think absolute credit where credit is due here, because you compare them with other selection committees, you take even Australia, there's constant bickering and worry about what the selection committee does, why the Marshes get a lengthy run, why this guy is not there, why that guy is not there, why is Rod Marsh or whoever the selector is not calling. I mean, only for a brief while when John Inverarity was there did Australia actually have a fairly logical system where everybody knew their place. You come to England, England's been really good for a while. I mean, they call players, they speak to them, everybody knows where they stand. But even there, if you look at Trevor Bayliss talking on Mark Stoneman recently, he was saying that he's not watched him in county cricket. So that way our selectors are on the ball. There's a selector who's traveling with the team all the time. Rahul Dravid's in touch with the selectors. I think the current system deserves a lot of credit for where it is and where the fringe players know how they stand. It's very difficult in a country like India. You've got 28 teams, 30 teams playing. You've got the IPL on top of that. There's a zonal tournament. So I think they're doing a fantastic job of managing the fringe talent and the larger pool as such. So I think a lot of credit where it is due.
All right. And we will get to see around during the one-day series if the selection also means India trying to reinvent themselves as a one-day team in terms of the template, especially after they were found wanting at the Champions Trophy a couple of times. Okay. And we move on to sort of the last order of business for the day. We are introducing a new segment this week, or rather this episode, called the DRS, the delayed rant segment, because we waited so long to get the episode out, but there have been stuff that we have been wanting to rant about. And this week, Clive, it is the infamous demerit points, which have gotten Ravindra Jadeja suspended for the third test. So firstly, Clive, could you give everybody a primer on what the heck is or are demerit points?
Okay, so basically what demerit points is that every time you break a law of the game or the code of conduct or anything like that, you get a point. So the points vary on, you know, how severe your case is. It could be 1 or 2 points, 3 or 4. It depends on how severe your mistake is in the game. So what happens is, over a period of time, over 2 years, your points accumulate and then you are banned period. So Jadeja, I think, was banned. He got 4 points and he was banned to ODIs, whatever comes first. So that's how it works, basically. That's the thing. And that's the same thing what happened to Kagiso Rabada as well. And Dikvela as well is one of the players who could be banned in the future as well, because he has accumulated, I think, 3 points right now for his demerits, while 2-4 in the South Africa tour and 1 against Zimbabwe. So if he, in the next 18 months, if he does, which the ICC referees don't find under the code of conduct or fine, they might give him a demerit point and they might just ban him for a game or two.
I have a question here, Clive.
Okay.
Yeah. Suppose like Ravindra Jadeja got banned right now. So when he comes back, do the points again start accumulating from one, or do they just increase and the penalty will keep increasing?
No. It will just increase from there. So what happens is, suppose, okay, from Jan 1st onwards, Jan 1st, 2015, he got 2 points. Jan 1st, 2016, he got 2 points. Okay, they don't expire till Jan 1st, 2018 comes.
Okay.
So even if he gets more points, like suppose he keeps accumulating points. So that's what was people were talking about. Like, what if he, you know, why is he being punished for something he's already been punished for before? So the simple explanation was that, okay, if you have caused a discretion, then you have to suffer again. If you are doing it within a period of 2 years, then your ban should increase as well. But which I don't think is fair, because once you are punished, you shouldn't be punished again for the same crime, basically.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, the whole system itself. If you just go back to why it came into place, the point was that cricketers earn a lot of money, and a match fine or a match fee fine doesn't make too big a difference to them. I mean, if they keep doing the same transgression or going past the same line, people will just fine 50%, 70%, and they couldn't care less about it. So the ICC's point was to hit them where it hurts, which is to ban them from matches, to kind of punish them throughout a period. But what Clive says is right. Let's take an example of Jadeja. Jadeja has now been banned for one test for accumulating, I think, 6 demerit points. Now, if he accumulates 2 more points, the ban as per the ICC's code of conduct is 2 test matches. Now, Jadeja has already served a 1-match ban, so he should get 1 more matches ban. Instead, he'll get, and which means that for 8 points, he's getting a ban of 3 matches, 3 test matches. So, the system itself and the way it's implemented is flawed. The intent is right, but if you look at it, if you keep accumulating points, I think you can't accumulate anything more than 8, for example. And if Jadeja, probably if he commits 3 transgressions within, I think October 2016 was the first time he committed a transgression or earned a demerit point. So that is going to last till October 2018. What he's accumulated in Sri Lanka now will last till August 2019. So it's all a little complex and difficult to explain over a podcast. I mean, it's a lot of tables and a lot of calculations that is involved in this.
Yeah, but you know, like Sid Monga, another issue which Sid Monga brought up was that, you know, how it's like, you know, it's not consistent at all. Because I remember in the Chennai test, Joe Root, he threw the ball at KL Rahul, and that was, you know, that was something which could was there was some intent to hurt, I guess. Okay, and he was not given a demerit point for that. So it's like,
yeah, the whole Australia series, man. Nobody got a single demerit point throughout the series.
Yes, exactly.
Somebody went Smith. To the dressing room to ask for DRS. Somebody called somebody else a cheat. Nothing really happened, right? So yeah, I mean, we're probably doing the causation correlation thing, but I mean, you never know what's happening, because the different officials officiating, there's a different match referee. Really don't know if there's anything more than coincidence to this.
So the first thing was, I wasn't honestly very familiar with the whole demerit point system. The first time I saw it, my first instinct was right. It is just as complicated as airline miles and Shopper Stop loyalty points. It is just as probably illogical also, because they seem to have expiry dates. They seem to have accumulation rules, which sound weird and unfair. So what I have been wondering is, would would there not be a better way of keeping a running track of disciplinary issues with players rather than looking at just simple accumulation? I mean, even in football, for example, during tournaments, there are places where things reset after a reasonable level. I think the Premier League, for example, it is 5 yellow cards, Srinath, after which the suspension takes...
Correct. It's 5.
Yeah, and then the slate is clean and you are down to a new count again. So would you think something like that could work here while keeping the point system intact but changing the duration as to how it takes effect?
Yeah, the big difference from airline miles is that you can never burn down your demerit points for 2 years, which is a big issue there. And even if you burn them down, I mean, if you try to burn them down, which is what Jadeja is supposed to be doing or supposed to have done during this one-match ban, he starts off with the same amount of miles that he had before this. And his next reward, which is basically to say that if there are 4 tiers in your rewards program, you're getting promoted irrespective of how many points you burned down.
Okay. So would you suggest any kind of a change, or would you look at this system to go on for some time and see how it affects discipline?
No, I think a simple change would be that if somebody earns 6 demerit points, he gets a 1-test ban, like I said earlier. If somebody gets 8 demerit points, his 2-test ban should mean that he gets only one more ban to make up for it. Now, right now, he gets a 3-test match ban because it's 1+2. So, simple changes like that. I mean, it's harder to say how it'll work, but simple changes like that in the implementation should do, because the intent is absolutely right here.
All right. Clive, your thoughts?
I like how Premier League does it. 5 yellow cards, you get suspended, and then you have a clean slate. That's the same thing, you know, they should follow for international matches as well. But I would, you know, make it different in the sense that, okay, so if you have a real serious transgression, like, you know, if tampering the ball or, you know, physical fights or something like that, they are tallied in a different table. And, you know, all these small transgressions, like, you know, like what Rabada did by abusing, by getting the stump, by catching what he's, the foul words he said or something like that, they go into a separate table. So you are fined for the small transgressions and you're banned for the major ones.
Okay. So looking for picking punishment, the severity of the punishment according to the severity of the
transgression. Because getting banned for, suppose if you're like, as you know, Ben Stokes as well said it, that Rabada was just unlucky that the stump bike was on when he said the foul language or foul word. So it's not his mistake. So what if over three games, you know, his luck is really that bad that he gets caught every time? Okay. Do you think his 1-match or 2-match ban is equal to what someone pushing does in one game? I don't think so. So you need to look, ICC need to, you know, decide how severe the punishment is, because you can't go around giving the same punishment for the same kind of like multiple offenses or something like that. It's a bit not very well thought out yet. Yeah.
I exactly agree with Clive on this. Because there might be a scenario, you know, where suppose Mitchell Starc has already accumulated like 5 points, and suppose he does something silly during the Ashes and then he gets banned for 1 test match. So that ends up affecting Australia and for something which, you know, like that, like the thing Clive told, ki Rabada was unlucky to be caught off on the mic. So if something similar happens during an important series, this one is like India-Sri Lanka, and, you know, Ravindra Jadeja would be happy with the rest probably. So... probably if there is some competitive series going on and this thing happens, you know, it's surely going to hurt the prospects of that team, that particular team. So I am against this point sort of thing.
All right. So it's unwitting butterfly effect that could come into the picture. All right. I think we had for this week, because I think we've kind of touched on the Indian Lanka series, looking forward to the ODI and how the interestingly selected squad will perform. And of course, our delayed rant on
also
the demerit point system.
Also, we'd like to dedicate this episode to Vinayak, who is absent today, the loudspeaker of Pod of Cricket.
The loudspeaker of Pod of Cricket. I think he'd be pretty glad to hear that. Okay, so that brings us to the end of all the time we have for this particular episode of Pod of Cricket. we will be joining you soon again after the end of the ODI and the T20 series in Sri Lanka. Looking forward to when India come back home for a home stretch. Would be interesting to look forward to that one. And as always, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Sameer. Pleasure once again hosting you.
Welcome.
And thank you, Clive. We have missed Vinayak a lot, but hopefully he'll be back with a bang in the next episode. In the meantime, you guys can find us on Pocket Casts, on iTunes, or any other podcast platform that you use. Please search for Pod of Cricket. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Pod of Cricket. Please leave your comments, your suggestions, and anything that you want discussed on the podcast there. Meanwhile, along with Sameer, Clive, and Srinath, this is Tariq signing off from this episode of Pod of Cricket.